go there.
With Shira and Ryan.
Entertainment.
Music. Pop culture.
LGBT plus news. Let's go there.
Starts now.
We are back and it's Thursday. Can't believe it. You know, this has been a shorter week, but it feels like it's been long.
It actually has been the longest four-day week I have ever experienced in my entire life. I would not start it over. But
wow.
Unfortunately, we're doing it all over again next
week. We're starting on an optimistic note here.
No, but I think we do have a lot to be optimistic for.
Yes,
because
we do.
Obviously, we're still kind of in this, we're in January still, at the end of January. And I think it's time for a little update for our resolutions.
Oh, yeah. I wish we had a sound thing that said resolution
update. Okay, could you please stop reminding people that our show is not developed?
It's a DIY show.
It's a DIY show. But coming soon. Coming very soon. No, but okay, so I will say this. I have like a little, you know, report, a little praise
report.
Okay,
what's your update?
My update is I have been, I actually this week successfully have worked out twice this week.
Okay.
And I've been, to keep myself accountable, I'm like trying to mark it in my calendar, being like,
yes.
Okay, I won't mark it in my calendar until it's actually done. So that's like my reward for myself to, to be able to see in my calendar, like, oh, you did work out today. Like, you did good to remind myself.
Yeah. What do you do to work out?
So I do, I'm doing a lot of cardio now. So I do about 45 minutes on the elliptical.
Oh my God.
Yes, I'll be all sweaty and glistening and try. And you know what really keeps me motivated
what?
In gyms? I guess, I don't know what trainers say about this. So if you're a trainer and you're listening, please let us know. But I always see people like on the treadmills, like around me running.
Uh-huh.
And I try to keep up with them.
Oh,
where I'm
really?
Like, I start kind of creating this competition in my brain where I'm like, oh, okay, so if I see him like slow down his thing, then I'll slow down a little bit. But then if he
they're
turns it back
you're
up,
stalking them.
No, he does, you're not. They're not paying because I'm the way our gym is set up. The ellipticals are behind the treadmills, but I can still see like if someone's turning it up. So I like feel like I have like my own little race with
that's
them.
Actually really funny.
I have a little create
good
competitive
for you.
Moment.
Whatever works for you.
Thank you, darling.
I also.
Uh-huh.
Ended up, I'm on my third yoga session thing this week. So I went to yoga on Sunday, and then I went Tuesday at 6:30 in the morning, and I went this morning at 8 a.m., and I'm doing the hot yoga. So talk about sweating. I'm sweating up a storm like a puddle.
I don't like the idea of that, especially you can't even handle hot spaces, especially
well, that's
the
different.
Way that-
it's meant to be a hot space. I'm not into hot spaces when it's not meant to be a claustrophobic hot space. Like, I need prep. I need to have, you know, my mind needs to be ready for it.
I don't know. I just think you're dramatic.
So anyway, so I did go to this yoga class, and let me tell you, this is in Venice, California. So there's a lot of good-looking people.
Okay.
It's very hippie.
All right.
And I, of course, bumped into a guy that I have a crush on.
You know what?
Who didn't answer my last DM on Instagram.
I think, audience, if you're listening, for Shira Lazar, all roads lead to a boy. All roads. No matter where we're going, it could start at Kentucky Fried Chicken and end with a boy. It can start at, you know, the Dunkin' Donuts and still end with a boy. All roads end with a boy.
Oh, you're making me laugh.
It's beautiful.
I mean, it's true. I'm not going to lie. You know.
But I do think that's good karma for you because you have been trying to change your lifestyle with this whole 5 a.m. club.
Did the 5 a.m. thing.
So
although I did need to take a nap in the middle of the day like I'm an old person.
You did. I came into the green room and you were like drooling. It was like puddles of just, it's a combination of sweat and spit. I'm like,
my
ew.
Mouth was just like open. Like I was in that very relaxed, deep sleep
mode. I'm
like, mode.
Who gets to sleep at work? Shira Lazar.
You know what? It's good for my mental health.
Okay, all right.
Okay?
That's fine.
Everyone knows that green room is my second bed.
I'm not judging you, but I am. But it's okay.
Now my brain is working. I need my 1 hour midday sleep. Okay, let's get into some what's trending in the news right now, top of the hour. This Trump-appointed federal judge, Kyle Duncan, is making news. Now, Duncan has a long history of being anti-LGBT, and this latest moment is pretty crazy. Now, he refused to call a transgender defendant by her correct pronouns and even said that doing that is just courtesy.
And so here's the thing. When you're in a courtroom, especially after kind of experience during jury duty, it is so intimidating, the power that the judge has. It's like if you are a marginalized person or if you're a trans person being like, hey, could you please refer to me as this? And they're saying no. It's not like you can argue back with them because guess what? They can lock you up if they want to, if they feel like you're being in contempt with court.
Yeah.
So it's like there is a very big power dynamic that I feel like is not really talked about when it comes to LGBTQ people having to deal with, you know, spaces like that.
True. Well, this person, Catherine Nicole the defendant who requested to have her conviction records revised to match her changed name. And the request was denied because apparently there was no error in paperwork because her legal name, Norman Varner, is listed on the records. Now, Duncan voided the decision because he said that the lower court had no jurisdiction, but then proceeded. So he could have just ended it there.
Yeah.
Which was already bad enough, by the way.
But then
proceeded to mock Jett's request to be referred to by female pronouns and her new name.
Wow.
Yeah. Duncan goes on to say that courts respecting transgender people the same way that they would cisgender people may approve of the litigant's underlying legal position, and that correctly naming gender trans people is more complex than it seems at the surface.
So there's this awesome article that we pulled this from, but there's this awesome article that it speaks about even at the end of Trump's kind of quote unquote legacy of what he's leaving behind, and once he leaves office, there's still going to be trails because of the judges that have been appointed, and there's still going to be discrimination through people that have believed in his regime and have believed in everything that he's put out there, and it just sucks that this is a prime example of that.
Okay, we need to go to this next story. Senator Lindsey Graham, this is crazy, has repeatedly slammed the impeachment proceedings against President Donald Trump and insisted he doesn't need to see evidence or hear from witnesses. Okay.
Oh God.
But then this footage resurfaced online this week because it seems like he didn't always think this way. 20 years ago, he had a lot to say during the impeachment of former President Bill Clinton, and someone put together what he said now and what he said 20 years ago, and you're going to see the difference.
I am not going to support witnesses being called for by the president. I'm not going to support witnesses being called for by Senator Schumer.
Have a witness who was there, who was engaged in it, who was in the middle of it, telling you about what they were doing and why. It's a totally different case. And it's the difference between getting the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
That's why we need witnesses, ladies and gentlemen, to clarify who said what, who's being honest, who's not, and what really did happen in this sordid tale.
Fascinating. Fascinating. I mean, so happy that we have history right here.
The hypocrisy just jumps out every single time, doesn't it?
I want to know what he thinks about this. Anyway.
No, they just act like it never happened.
Right. They blacked out during their own life. Now, coming up, a new campaign that Republicans are leading and why it's not good for Donald Trump. That's up next.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now, this is a very interesting ad campaign that just came out. And it came out from a Republican group.
I know, right? This is very interesting where the tides have turned. Everything has took a turn.
So they launched this new ad campaign urging the Senate to remove President Donald Trump at the conclusion of the impeachment trial. And they talk about elevating VP Mike Pence into the Oval Office.
Like, what does that even mean? I mean, I think people are starting to be so sick of Donald Trump's BS that they're saying, okay, we got to go on last resort. And Mike Pence happens to be there, and it sucks.
Now, we've got the commercial that's actually set to run on Fox News as the impeachment vote nears. So here it is.
Mike Pence doesn't brag about sexually assaulting women.
Grab him by the I can do anything.
Mike Pence doesn't pressure foreign governments into investigating his political rivals.
Ukraine should start an investigation into the Biden.
Mike Pence doesn't mock and make fun of people with handicaps.
You got to see this guy. Oh, I don't know what I said. Oh.
Donald Trump is being impeached. It's time for President Pence. At least it's an improvement.
All right, well,
I mean,
there you
at
go.
Least it is an improvement, I guess.
I mean, who knows? I feel like Mike Pence probably speaks at a certain point. He seems like he doesn't talk at all, but we know a lot of people don't feel like it's a better choice.
No, I don't think it's a better choice at all. I think it's honestly a terrible choice. I think both choices are kind of like, oh, would I rather have this bomb go off or this bomb go off? It just doesn't feel like there's a safe choice anywhere. And I often think, you know, vice president, going back to you saying that he doesn't really speak, well, he's a vice president. Most vice presidents don't really speak. They don't really do much.
I feel like Joe Biden would speak more.
Joe Biden was actually friends with you know, Obama. I think Obama, like, they had a courtship and that people recognized and they heard him speak highly of. Really, Trump doesn't really talk much about Pence. And the last time Trump talked about him, he tried to throw Pence under the bus with that whole Ukraine-Iran situation.
Well, you know, he's trying to throw everyone under the bus for everything.
But I think it doesn't really show that there's really that much
camaraderie or loyalty.
Yeah, or loyalty with those two.
Well, the group that put it together, Defending Democracy Together, said removing Trump won't undo the 2016 presidential election. As the president's supporters have claimed, they said it won't put Hillary Clinton or Nancy Pelosi in the White House. Instead, it will give us President Mike Pence.
Ew. And this was like trending all day today, like on social media. Like, this is wild that people are actually taking this a little serious.
Well, it seems like they're not the only group. Of course, we've also reported about this other group doing the same thing. It's called the Lincoln Project, right, led by a group of prominent conservatives, including attorney George Conway, who you might know as the husband of Kellyanne Conway, right, the weirdest couple ever. And that organization just launched its own impeachment-related ad calling on Senator Susan Collins to do your job and vote for witnesses and evidence in the Senate trial.
Yeah, I'm just interested in seeing, because this is, you know, it's interesting that there are some Republicans who are saying that Trump is enough is enough. And I think now we're talking about this middle line between being a conservative and being like, you know, being conservative Republican, but also being a Trumper. And I think people are now trying to draw this line with all this mess kind of happening. And I think this is also something that people are like, okay, if we're going to go into the 2020 elections, I also think this is interesting to show that people are probably feeling like, Republicans are probably feeling like they could be beat in some way. Like, if we don't keep a Republican in the office, the Democrats will, like, somehow come through and actually win this thing. So I do think this, there's also some fear-based motivation surrounding
this. I feel
this.
Like there's a bit of a feeling of a loss of control because and a lack of trust, definitely.
They're the ones that voted for Trump. Let's be quite honest here. Like, these same group of people, I can probably assume that they voted for Trump to be in this White House, but now that they've seen everything that he's done, they're like, oh, God, well, can we just have Mike Pence then? But even that's not enough. It's like, you're settling. Like, have some more respect for yourself.
We're in a settling state of business.
I don't want that. I'm like, have some respect for, you know, this country, yourselves, and generations after us. Like, why do we feel like we need to settle for this man or even Mike Pence?
Ego, pride. Unfortunately, which is why a lot of people are just trying to keep things going and support him. I mean, like, also a delusion, like they're under some sort of spell.
Well, if you think The Handmaid's Tale would happen under Trump, imagine what it would look like with, you know, this President Pence and his first lady. Because honestly, I just don't even like looking at them. I feel like no, not at all.
Well, they've really pushed for a lot of anti-LGBTQ policy,
you know,
religion,
wife,
all that. And by the way, we're going to be getting into a conversation about religion and faith in schools because Trump did talk about this recently and how they're actually going to be putting more support towards bringing in religion into schools. So we're going to be getting into that later in the show. But Mike Pence also was in the headlines today, and it was going viral, this video where it appears to show Prince Charles skipping him while shaking officials' hands. So he was walking past Mike Pence while shaking the hands of people, officials, during a visit to the World Holocaust Forum in Jerusalem. And it's so obvious. Literally, he's shake, 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 pass Pence. And then continuing to shake.
But,
and you can see Pence is just like slapping him on the arm.
But you know the next person he shook hands with was Vladimir Putin. So did it really even get better?
Does that say?
It literally felt like there was a line of like supervillains lining up right next
to
each other.
It's strange. Well, Pence's office pushed back saying the two leaders had met backstage and spoke prior to the event. And that's why he didn't want to maybe a double shake that day.
Mike Pence was like, you better put out a message saying that I didn't get ignored real quick.
It's so cringy. It's hard to watch. Anyway. Okay, that was some what's trending in the news right now. We're moving into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea, Ryan?
Oh, my God. Find out what celebrity just revealed that she lives with her husband and her ex-boyfriend. Yeah, that's not weird at all. That's coming up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, so It's time for What's the Tea, your entertainment pop culture stories of the day. And we got to talk about what Amy Schumer living with her ex-boyfriend and her husband all at the same time. I don't understand it, but it's happening. Here's What's the Tea.
Who needs help with rent here? I'm confused.
I mean, because somebody is really going through, and it seems like it might be Amy Schumer. No, I'm just joking. So Amy basically was talking, speaking of Howard Stern, we were talking about him during the break.
Yeah.
So she was basically, you know, talking about having a new roommate. His name is Kyle. Basically, she was talking to Howard Stern, explaining their living situation during her visit and basically how the exes make it work. So she says, I've been living there for a month and a half. I'm so confused. Her apartment is beautiful. This is what the comedian is saying.
Yeah,
this is what the writer who's kind of going through her book, because, you know, she also has a book. It's called Inside Amy Schumer. And this is who's talking to Howard Stern about this whole entire thing.
Okay.
So basically, this is what the writer said. Said, I've been there for a month and a half. She's been very cool. Basically explaining that he's been bunking with, you know, Amy while they work on her new Hulu show, Love, Beth, and Dunnigan. Kyle jokes that he has no plans to ever leave Schumer and her husband's pad. He said, I'm supposed to leave in 3 weeks, but I don't think I'm going anywhere.
Wait, so is Kyle
her ex? Kyle's her ex, and he's doing the interview with Howard.
And he's working with her.
Yeah, so they're like it's a very incestual relationship everything.
You know, Ryan, it's nice to know that I'm not alone with the dysfunctional or like kind of offbeat dynamics with exes.
I mean, are you though? I feel like you are. Just because they're doing it doesn't really mean it's a thing. I just think...
I mean, I like Amy Schumer. She's doing well. It seems like she's making it work.
But I find that to be incredibly uncomfortable. Like, imagine you're living with your partner and they say, oh, hey, can my ex come live with us for a few? Like, we're working together. No big deal. But can they just, like, live in the back room? Would you actually allow that? And if it was, like, a person of the same sex as you?
I'm meaning a chick, if I was with someone, it would really depend on many things.
Like, what would it depend on? Tell me those
things. Like super hot, like wearing like little yoga pants
so
and
an
exercise.
You rather her be ugly. So you're saying, okay, if she's not attractive, if she is butt ugly, then yes, she can stay in the back room like the little stepchild
if I feel
Cinderella.
Like there's a, listen. I'm very zen and everything. Like, I'm not looking. I'm trying to let go of jealousy or resentment and all that. But what I'm saying is, like, why stir up some triggers? Why stir up triggers? Why have someone in your face that's, you know, I feel like if it's a super hot chick, you know, and assuming if I was with someone, I was married, I've already had a kid, maybe I'm not, like, in my best shape.
Uh-huh.
And then I have this, like, beautiful hot chick that's my ex's ex, or no, my current person's ex.
But didn't you used
running
to tell
around.
Me your ex liked to walk around the house naked?
Bart?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would walk around the house naked,
but
too.
But y'all can't do that when y'all got somebody in the back room.
True.
And also...
Unless we just continue doing that, then it's even more awkward.
Also, Bart's place was beautiful. I mean, there's some amenities that come with your ex, you know. There were some amenities that kind of came with that place. And actually, Kyle, who's Amy Schumer's ex, talked about how now he's become rather entitled and that he's got accustomed to basically the household's lavish amenities.
That's how I felt before leaving my ex's place.
I mean, yeah, you feel that way, but you are the ex, not this random, I guess y'all are both exes.
Yeah, maybe you and Kyle need to meet each other.
So what does basically Amy's husband think about this whole entire thing?
Yeah.
Guess what? You got to find out by going to the website.
Really?
No, I'm just joking.
We are
Channel
Q, or are you going
to... No, I'm going to tell you guys. I was just joking. You can.
I was like ready to go on it. Okay. I want to know what this guy looks like.
So her husband's actually very cute.
No, I
want
to know the ex.
So
he's single.
According to Amy's ex, basically
Dunnigan.
Kyle says that they bro out. He has a very good relationship with her husband. He said, we play chess and all the food is really good and free because Amy Schumer's husband
seems like the life.
I mean, yeah, he's like freeloading off of this family.
So I don't know if I should follow him on Instagram.
No, it sounds like that. I mean, if that's your taste in men,
well,
that really says a lot.
I would like to hang out at Amy Schumer's place.
What did I tell y'all earlier? All roads lead to a man. Coming up next in What's the Tea, the shocking reveal about James Corden's carpool karaoke that has all of his fans shook. Honey, that is coming up in 6 minutes.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
All right, we're back with What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. And here's a real quick update. If you did not know, it's been trending everywhere. Lena Waithe and her wife, Elena Mayo, have decided to go their separate ways. Hmm. This news is coming after 2 months after, Lena went on Ellen to announce that they got secretly married.
Oh.
So I guess the U-Haul truck didn't last that long, but... they are unfortunately now divorced, and a statement was shared with E! News about their decision to split. Basically saying this, after careful thought and consideration, we have decided to part ways. We have nothing but support for one another and ask that you respect our privacy during the time. So, yeah.
And I was excited because I was like, hey, Lena Waithe, like, she's a good catch. However,
tea is that she's been constantly cheating on her.
Yeah, so no.
Yeah, nah.
Not into it.
Not cute, not cute.
Too bad. Lena Waithe is doing really well. She needs to work on her relationship skills.
Oh, doesn't she, though? But let's actually talk about the real tea here, because I woke up this morning for some reason seeing carpool karaoke trend, and I was like, okay, maybe there's a great artist that's stopping by.
Yeah.
Nope, it wasn't that. It was literally a fan had saw James Corden and Justin Bieber filming an upcoming episode of Carpool Karaoke, mm-hmm. and literally... everyone was shocked that James Corden does not drive that Range Rover he's always sitting in.
I mean, I was shocked, but then I'm also like, obviously, it's a total liability. Like, why would he be actually driving?
I'm sorry. If you were one of those people that just heard that and you took, like, you said a what? Are you kidding me? You need to, like, get off the drugs you're on.
I know. Movie magic, right?
Like, are you
kidding me? You've
ruined
it for me.
No, this is not. It's obviously, if they're driving around Los Angeles, half the time, James Corden is even looking at the damn, you know, a steering wheel or even holding it. He's like dancing and stuff. So I'm happy that he's like on this pulley like thing that the like they use in the movies where you think the cars are driving, but they're
really
they're
not. Pulling them on a bunch of other wheels, and then obviously on the top of the car, you have all these screens and cameras. So it's obviously you couldn't be driving properly, but people are really shocked.
Yeah,
I gotta, their dreams have been ruined.
I gotta read some of the comments. Someone said, saw James Corden and Justin Bieber filming Carpool Karaoke, and this is why I have trust issues. He isn't even driving. They later added, next thing you know, they're gonna tell us that his friends don't actually need a ride, which is hilarious. Someone also said, my whole life has been a lie, which obviously all of this conversation around Carpool Karaoke, James had to release a statement. His team, The Late Late Show, said this. James is always driving during Carpool Karaoke. However, on the rare occasion when there is a stunt component and the producers feel it is unsafe to drive, we use a rig. So I guess they're saying he does normally drive, but I don't know if I necessarily really believe that.
I don't know either. And then it says in this article, Corden made a light of the speculation by tweeting a photo of him and Samuel L. Jackson in front of a green screen. Guys, we don't even use a real car. it wouldn't surprise me, because why would he drive? Although I feel like I've seen some of the videos and it looks like he's actually driving. But once again, he's a good actor.
I just think this proves that the only people on the internet that are like actually using social media are like 5-year-olds, because it would take a childlike mind to truly believe that this man was driving around Los Angeles and like singing and clapping and dancing and not even paying attention to the road in the way that it just made no sense to me. I was like, are y'all on crack?
That's
like,
not what fair is going on? Because I'm one of those people, and I do that when I'm in the car too.
I mean, honestly, that says a lot about you, and I'm not even shocked. So if you want to know more about this story and others, head over to WeAreChannelQ.com and make sure to keep us favorited on that radio.com app and keep us followed on LGT Show.
Well, coming up, we've got What's Trending in the News. Top of the hour, the latest surrounding, you know, that coronavirus that has been going around, and we had the first case here in the U.S. Should we all be worried? We're giving you that the details next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, coming up in the next hour, before we get into what's trending in the news, we're going to be getting into this trend of men taking over women-dominated jobs and why women should be worried. And we have a professor that actually did all this research and wrote this great article on Mike.com, who's joining us. That's coming up right after what's trending in the news. So stay tuned and stick with us for that.
Mm-hmm.
We always have the good combos right here. just saying. All right, here are some headlines. In South Korea, there's a mandatory two-year military service required for all men. So Bayan Hui-soo found a specialized far-from-home high school for future military officers and in March 2017 joined the ranks of South Korea's army as an officer. Now, on Wednesday, the army decided Bayan could no longer serve in South Korea's military because of mental and physical disability. That's what they're saying. But it's not necessarily because of that. Bayan, a 21-year-old staff sergeant, recently underwent sex reassignment surgery to become female. And so this clip of her going viral now because of just not being accepted, it's a big story. And we obviously couldn't play the clip because it's not English.
Yeah.
But it's really sad.
And it's very visual.
It's really sad to watch. And she says, I'm going to fight to the end until the day I return to the army. In the video, she's tearing up. And she said this at a news conference in Seoul yesterday afternoon. She said her unit and superiors were aware and supportive of her decision to proceed with the surgery and had knowingly signed off on her travel to Thailand for the procedure. But now it seems like they are going backwards with their decision. So that's really unfortunate. They have no specific...
This story is so sad.
By the way, South Korean authorities said that while the military has no specific regulations banning transgender service members or concerning their transition, it considers the removal of genitals a disability necessitating the discharge decision. So it ends up being a loophole.
Wow.
So hopefully things will change there. Now, we teased also about the virus going around, the coronavirus. It has taken over Wuhan in China and surrounding cities. Wuhan, where the deadly virus originated, has temporarily closed all outbound public transportation. They're like on lockdown. Flights, trains, in an attempt to limit the spread of the pneumonia-like coronavirus. This is like in some sort of crazy, like, end of the apocalypse movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
The outbreak has killed an estimated 17 people and sickened more than 500 patients, and the World Health Organization declined to make a decision regarding whether the mysterious disease is an international emergency, although it has hit here in the U.S.
This is an international emergency, and honestly, if I know there's a lot of people that do not believe in vaccinating or anything, and I don't even know if there's a vaccine for this shit, but please, get your lives together.
Did you just say for this
No, I said for this yet.
Oh, I thought you said for this.
No, I didn't cuss. I know how to follow the rules.
I could see you being like, I don't know if there's a vaccine.
I didn't know, but seriously, I don't. We playing games. I honestly have a fear about the end of the world ending like this.
I mean, it's possible. Things happen.
Wow, Cher, thanks for that uplifting.
But it's okay.
Message.
We'll be like the last man on Earth, and then we'll be able to like live in people's mansions.
Okay, that's a great show. So yes.
We want the reality show version of it. Okay, those were some headlines, top of the hour. More in the next hour right here on Let's Go There. Now, coming up, more men are taking on women-dominated jobs and why women should be worried. That's next.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
So this next story is really interesting. There was a whole study done about unemployment for men and how it compares to women and the jobs that women take and how possibly men could take them over at a certain point. And there is a trend seeing that it's happening. Now, this research was posted on Mike.com in this really interesting article, that talks about how the last few decades, many of the high-paying jobs that are mostly done by men, like manufacturing, have either gone to a contracted, contract workers or disappeared. At the same time, many jobs in fields dominated by women, like education, healthcare, have significantly increased. Female-dominated jobs have some of the highest projected job and wage growth in the economy. So you might say to yourself, oh, this is a good thing, right?
Right.
Well, it might not be so good for women because it seems like as the unemployment of men have increased in these other jobs, they're going to end up in jobs that women are doing and actually possibly taking over.
Which it just feels like obviously is completely unfair. And it just also, I feel like, no shade, but women often in certain things, I feel like women are more capable of those jobs. If you're really thinking about it, if we're talking about teachers, like I rather have female teachers because female teachers in my life have always been the teachers that I always remember and just like credit for me being who I am.
But I also feel like you naturally connect with women.
No, but I also
better.
My choir teacher was a male teacher and he was awesome. But I just feel like there's just some things when you're talking about this idea of like you know, how to nurture your students and children, like things like that. I always think like, oh, this makes sense for certain people.
I know. Well, we have actually Jill Yavorsky joining us who did some of this research, and we want to get into some of the findings and the surprising ones as well. Jill is an assistant professor of sociology, organizational science at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, now what led you to want to do this research?
Well, so what we're noticing more broadly over the last 30, 40 years is that women have made a lot of progress in entering into male-dominated jobs. Mm. And kind of this missing half of the gender revolution is really getting men to enter and embrace female-dominated domains. So it's really not a zero-sum game, but men going into female-dominated jobs is a really positive thing and can be really beneficial. And there's certainly not any kind of indicator that men are taking over female-dominated jobs. In fact, we've seen virtually no movement over the past 30 years, very little movement over the past 30 years of men entering into female-dominated jobs. So that's actually what spurred us to look at it, is saying, hey, okay, so what if men are unemployed? At that point, will that spark them to go into female-dominated jobs and consider these jobs that, like you mentioned in the earlier piece, that are high on job growth and also have projected high wage growth as well.
Okay, so can we break this down? What does it mean to, like, a female-dominated job? Like, what is considered a female job in certain stores? Because it does feel like there are these lines that are
being... These gender lines?
Yeah, these gender lines that are kind of being drawn.
Yeah, it's a good question. So typically researchers use a cutoff of either 65% female or between 65 to 75% or higher to designate a female-dominated job.
Okay.
So, I mean, you think about, like, teachers, nurses, clerical work, service industry jobs.
Yeah.
So, and in this article, you talk about, well, maybe they're not jumping in right now to take over those jobs. You know, if unemployment happens and they obviously just need a job, why would this be a negative thing for women?
Well, I really don't see it as being a negative thing for women. In fact, kind of our broader premise is that we really need to have a major cultural shift for men to start embracing feminine domains, feminine activities. That's where we've seen kind of the least amount of progress over the past 30 years, is that women have embraced masculine domains and get status, in fact, when they do masculine things, right? The common, a quick example is, you know, as a tomboy, that is status enhancing. Or when women go into STEM, they get a lot of cred for that. But when men go into female-dominated jobs, they're at risk of losing social status because it's still stigmatized to be associated with women.
Wow.
So that's kind of where we need to move, is because women are still devalued in our society and femininity is still devalued, men are stigmatized when they enter this work, and that's why many men have been avoiding this work in part.
So this
and have led to not want to have interest in this work.
Yeah, and so it seems like this is just another kind of effort to get rid of toxic masculinity, and it's like this underlying kind of theme.
Yeah, I mean, we know that gender socialization processes are a powerful thing in our society, that boys learn from a very young age to distance themselves from femininity, right? We tell them to man up, to not cry like a girl. There's all of these processes that boys learn to distance themselves from things that are associated with girls and women, and this carries on through adulthood. You know, this social sanctioning happens to adult men all the time.
So I love the results of this, and your motivation and intent is to, like, clear the gender gap in a way to allow everyone to just go after jobs that they're meant to do, that they want to do.
Yes,
but in
absolutely.
This, what stood out, I guess, and it was what brought us into this topic, was that men would experience job advantages, like wage and prestige bumps. So can you get into that part of it? Because that, for us, we're like,
that wouldn't fare well
for women.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so there's two parts to this. So we only include men in our study because we're really interested in movement from male-dominated mixed-gender jobs into female-dominated jobs. So when we talk about advantages, these job advantages, this is men. So unemployed men who went into female-dominated jobs experienced a 4% wage increase above and beyond the job that they had previous before unemployment. So that 4% wage increase was relative to their own job before they were unemployed. And the reason that's really important is because it suggests that female-dominated jobs can be a pathway for some men to mitigate the common scarring effects of unemployment. Because we know that typically when men are unemployed, they take a hit to their wages in their next subsequent job.
Yeah. And it seems like it's an incentive in some way. Like, all right, if you put away your pride, guess what? You can possibly make some more money.
Well, right. Yeah, that's actually what we think. One of the reasons why is that men may specifically target upgraded jobs than what they otherwise would in male-dominated and jobs more equally comprised of men and women, meaning like they may need a compensating factor in order to enter a female-dominated job.
Honey, most men need compensating factors.
Well, listen, I hope that part of this is the equality of it would say, okay, everyone gets to do whatever job they want, plus there's an equal opportunity here in terms of pay, instead of like right away going into it where like they're going to get a bump because they're making a big, bold move. I just, you know, hopefully that...
So I will say, yeah, so actually, so the second part to this, and you are right that men in female-dominated jobs on average still make more money than women do.
Yeah.
So the gender wage gap exists in nearly all industries and job types. We know that. We also have a lot of really interesting research about the glass escalator. This comes from Christine Williams' research done in the 1990s that has been continued. We find this in more recent work as well, where this is particularly true for white straight men when they enter into female-dominated jobs, that they're oftentimes propelled upward quicker than their female counterparts to authority and management positions.
Damn. Wow. All right.
And so
there you go.
Yeah, the glass escalator is this idea of like they have to potentially work hard to stay still.
So fascinating. Well, thank you for all this research and work you're doing. It is really interesting to hear about, and hopefully, it also inspires some action, right? Jill Yavorsky, thanks again for being here.
Thank you.
Now, Jill is an assistant professor of sociology, organizational science at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. Go check out her article and all her work on
Mike.com.
It's really
interesting. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Now, coming up, the difference between religion and faith being taught in schools nationwide and what Trump is pushing for more than ever before.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now, Trump is defending students who feel that they can't pray in schools. I actually, and you know, I don't agree with Trump. I agree that I do think whatever you practice, you should be able to be at peace with practicing that as long as it doesn't impact others.
No, I 100% agree with that sentiment. But I do think where the lines blur is oftentimes what Trump is fighting for are for people that look like him and are all a part of what the American quote unquote kind of religion is, which is Christianity. And it doesn't give space for other religions or other people to have that same kind of privilege of saying, hey, I want to, you know, wear my hijab. I want to do.
Yeah,
I
if you're
going to
say
this,
that
yeah,
everyone that
it has to be everyone.
Yeah, if you're going to defend religion in schools, then you should be defending everyone. Well, he's warning school administrators that they risk losing federal funds if they violate their students' rights to religious expression. He held an event in the Oval Office with a group of Christian, Jewish, and Muslim students and teachers to commemorate National Religious Freedom Day. The students and teachers said they have been discriminated against for practicing their religion at school. And I also think there's an underlying reason why that's happening right now.
Well,
which I wish Trump would take responsibility for that. The U.S. Supreme Court banned school-sponsored prayer in public schools in a 1962 decision, saying that it violated the First Amendment. But students are allowed still to meet and pray on school grounds as long as they do it privately and don't try to force others to do the same. Yeah, I think that makes sense. Well, we have Ian Smith joining us right now, who's a staff attorney at Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So what do you think about this latest news from Trump? Do you think it's problematic or does it make sense?
Well, it's certainly problematic. I mean, it's mostly... The problem with the guidelines that he issued is that they're mostly correct. They're sort of like misleading in a lot of ways, though. Misleading in a lot of ways that sort of encourage teachers to join in with students with their private prayer activities and for students to pray impair religion on other students in ways that could be bullying or harassing, right? So it, while not like these guidelines that the Department of Education published, while not technically wrong, are going to lead schools down a path that could get them into trouble.
Yeah, that's what really jumped out for me as well, because I think about, you know, kids that aren't necessarily comfortable with, you know, praying or even, you know, are even celebrating religion in any form or any shape, and they're feeling kind of like left out or feeling othered in a school system that probably already feels that, with, especially if you're in high school or if you're a kid in general, you're already going through your own set of emotions. Adding in religion just doesn't feel like it's the smart idea for them to feel even more comfortable in a place that they're in half the time of throughout the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know I do all the legal intake for our organization. So when people have questions or complaints, they come to me. And I know that, like, a lot of times it's really hard for people to speak up about this because, I mean, in some places you might be one of the only, you know, people of a minority faith or an atheist, right?
Yeah.
And so to have to put yourself out there and potentially face bullying and harassment and stuff like that is very difficult for people.
Yeah. And what's the difference when we're talking about religion versus faith?
Well, I mean, religion, I think, technically is the sort of organized practice, right?
Yeah.
Faith is just sort of the belief portion of it.
Yeah, because I agree with that. I just think, yeah, because I agree when they start to go into the line of talking about faith, that's really bringing in something personal, where we don't want to take religion completely out of, like, history books, because I do think there are certain histories, like religion throughout history, that are important to be informed on. So I guess how do you balance that?
Well, absolutely. So it is perfectly legal for public schools to teach about religion in an academic way, right? Like, if you're teaching the history of the Middle East, you're going to be talking about religion.
Yeah.
It's inevitable, right? But where they cross the line is that you can't teach things that require faith as truth, right? So, like, you might use the Bible to stories, like allegories, or to demonstrate, if you're teaching like literature, right? If you need to teach a certain biblical story to explain like an allusion or a reference in another literary work, that's okay. You can even use it to illustrate some historical things, right? Like, I mean, it is an ancient document that talks about the lives of people in the Middle East during certain time periods. But like, if you went into a history class and you said, and you taught that when the Jews left Egypt, right, and walked through the desert, that God parted the Red Sea and then Moses and the Jews walked, you know, through the gap, right? That's faith. You can't teach that is true, right? That's the line.
All right. Well,
so you can use it for academic reasons, but not for to like proselytize.
Fascinating. I'm just like, I mean, I didn't learn any of this stuff in school, actually.
I mean,
I also grew up in Canada. I grew up in Canada. So I don't know if that makes a difference. Well, I do want to talk about the separation of church and state, and if it's possible, coming up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now, we've been talking about President Trump, how he's defending students who feel they can't pray in schools, even warning schools that they will stop sending or at least decrease the federal funding if they violate their students' rights to religious expression. And back with us right now, we have Ian Smith, staff attorney at Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Thanks again for being here.
Yep, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so just recently, Trump defended and praised this guy named Joseph Kennedy. He's a Washington State high school football coach who actually lost his job after he refused to stop praying on the fields after the games.
Mm-hmm.
And this reminds me a lot of like how I grew up from the South. Like, I remember waking up at like 7 a.m. and there would be like kids surrounding the flagpole praying over the church every single morning. I'm wondering, you know, with Trump boldly and, you know, just being out loud with, you know, his praise for teachers or faculty staffs that are like, you know, talking about their faith. So, you know, I mean, out there at schools, it seems like there really won't be a change in some sense of like teachers are feeling kind of like empowered by this.
Yeah.
Wait, what happened?
We have a phone issue.
Oh, you're going out.
Hopefully. Oh, there you are.
Am I going out?
Yeah, now you're here.
You're here. You're back.
Oh, good. But yeah, definitely that sort of like empowerment is an issue, and not just in public schools, in a lot of default. I feel like that's part of the reason he did this guidance.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's interesting because obviously there's been a lot of tensions with how we approach, obviously, well, I was going to say politics, but also I think how we bring anything that's personal to us into these public spaces.
Yeah.
And I guess what is the balance and what are you guys doing at your organization, the Americans United for Separation of Church and State, daily to protect these things and these issues?
Well, I mean, we do a variety of things, right? We do lobbying, right? We try and head off like bad laws that endorse religion. We try and do grassroots organizing, right? We try and educate people about the separation of church and state and why it's important. It's gotten more challenging in recent years, I won't lie, but that's the goal of the organization.
Yeah. So, what is the biggest threat to the separation of church and state right now?
I mean, I know you might think it would be any particular thing, but the biggest threat is actually the courts right now, because at the end of the day, right, for every new thing that pops up, you have to be able to go into court and get a court ruling about whether something is a violation or not, right? And I mean, I think I saw a statistic at one point that President Trump has appointed something like a third of all of the federal trial court judges,
yeah.
Right? And it's similar all the way up through the system. And almost definitionally, the judges that he tends to appoint are hostile to the separation of church and state.
No, yeah.
It's really challenging.
And I even think about, like, what are some of the you know, if someone is living in the Bible Belt, which is the South, if people aren't familiar with that, how do they, like, fight this? What are some of their legal rights if they want to move forward and being like, wait, this makes me uncomfortable. I don't want to be in a school where I'm being kind of forced to pray if I don't want to.
Well, I mean, they can always contact us, and we will always, you know, we will always take a look and see if whatever is happening to them is a violation. And, you know, so we'll try non-litigation advocacy and on occasion litigation advocacy. Right. It that hasn't changed. The biggest change is the likelihood of success. But I almost think that you really it's getting more and more important, I think, for people to be willing to be out there and to fight on these issues. Right. Like,
yeah.
Like form communities, right? You know, be out and open so that other people in your community that feel the same way know where you are and know that they can come together around you, right? And I think that's the way to keep doing it, right? Get out in the open, do organizing, you know, get active. Those kinds of things are so important.
But when Trump and the administration is protecting religion in schools, are they protecting all religions?
Well, I mean, under the law, yes. The law protects all religions, right? Equally. Now, I don't think that is the goal of the Trump administration, right? I definitely think that they are much more interested in protecting the rights of evangelical Christians. And they would say that they aren't, that they're definitely being equal opportunity, but I think that's their goal. But again, the law protects all religions and people with no religion equally.
All right. Well, let's live by the law then, because I think everyone deserves to feel safe, whatever they're practicing. Ian Smith, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Ian
Smith
is a staff attorney at Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Now, coming up next, we've got what's trending in the news, top of the hour, what California is trying to do to end the homeless and housing crisis and how much it could cost. That's next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, we are back. We have a lot coming up in the next hour. We're going to be looking at how to manage budgets when you're in a relationship, because it can get messy.
Oh, I mean, messy for sure, because you can just have two different people looking at money differently. I mean, you can have someone that is just strapped and trying to keep hold to that budget because they're living in some like weird scarcity like mindset. Or
yeah.
You can have someone that is just super lavish and just wants what they want.
Yeah, we all come from different backgrounds. So it's hard, I think, to come together and think that you're always going to have the same outlook.
Yeah, unless you are from this like similar backgrounds, where then you're looking at money just completely the same because that's how you've both been raised. So, but I don't know.
We
can't talk too much about it because we got
an expert joining us.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into some what's trending in the news right now, top of the hour. California Governor Gavin Newsom sent a letter to federal housing chief Ben Carson urging the Trump administration to address homelessness by providing more funding for affordable housing.
Which, you know what? I actually really love Gavin Newsom. I feel like he's going to be like trying to run for president soon. Mayor Eric Garcetti. Like, I think they're seeing that Pete Buttigieg has kind of been able to do and pull off like something that's never really been done. And I think it's going to be great to see them take that, you know, that lane once they're doing it. Because I really like Gavin.
Eric has been getting a lot of crap for how he's handled the homeless and housing crisis here in Los Angeles. So a lot of people who do work with him, he had wanted to vie, you know, for the presidential candidate role, but they think that he's not going to be able to pull it off now.
Well, that's quite interesting that, with the homelessness stuff happening. But I feel like, obviously, it's a huge epidemic here, and it's like, I feel like everyone maybe is, and I might be speaking out of turn, but maybe everyone is doing what they can, but it just seems like, you know, it's going to be up to our federal level of getting the funds in, and I think that's what Gavin Newsom is trying to do.
So he did thank Carson for his, what he's saying, his offer to provide services to California to address homelessness, and also push for these resources to go towards initiatives that go beyond temporary tent villages. Mm. You know, something more sustainable.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
California governor warned that if federal aid provided only temporary shelters and did not include significant resources for building more affordable housing, we risk creating permanent homeless encampments on federal land.
My thing is, if
it's really scary,
as long as which is very scary, but as I just don't, I hope that they don't try to do what Vegas is doing. Remember, we reported about they're now trying to the law has happened where they're charging homeless people if they are living on the streets, and they're, you know, charging them either a fee or jail time. It's just like, let's figure something out.
Yeah,
here.
There needs to be balance. If you have housing and enough,
there
needs to be something there that provides choice of some sort. Because right now, we are in a really bad place, and something needs to happen.
And California is so overcrowded too, by the way. Like, just with just people in general, and it just feels like, okay, how do we find the space for that?
Yeah, well, they're saying emergency shelter solves sleep. We agree this is an urgent priority, but only housing and service solves homelessness. This is a huge thing, and I really hope something will be done. Amid a nationwide affordable housing crisis, California, as you mentioned, like, you know, it feels like there are so many people in California. California has one of the highest rates of homelessness.
Wow.
On any given day in January 2018, more than 500,000 people were homeless in the U.S., and nearly a quarter of those lived in California.
Wow. I mean, that honestly gives me chills when you think about that. Just and you actually see it in real time, especially here in Los Angeles, when you're driving down the streets and you just see, you know, streets long going miles and miles.
Tent villages.
It's really sad. So something has to be done.
And so he's asking for over $1 billion to address homelessness. So we'll see what happens with that. Hopefully 2020 will be the year that some change happens.
Yeah.
Now, after appearing on American Horror Story in 1984, Angelica Ross is doing some more horror stuff.
Oh my God, I also was with her last Friday at karaoke.
Wait, you were with like the who's who?
It was wild. She's amazing. She's everything like you would imagine. I am so obsessed. So when I saw this moment, I was like, yes!
Freaking out.
It's an early yes queen for sure.
Well, the actress and founder of TransTech Social Enterprises is now appearing in a thriller-themed photo campaign for Louis Vuitton's latest collection.
Yes, ma'am.
These pictures are really cool. And she's following in the footsteps of Pose co-star India Moore, who has also developed a close relationship with the brand. Ross fronts a fictional horror book, The Escape Room. And it says, when the future knocks, open the door. Maybe it's a little sci-fi as well. And she says, I asked Louis Vuitton if I could rock my natural hair in an afro, and they came back with an enthusiastic yes. So congrats on that one. It's a fun campaign. Go check it out on her social media.
I mean, she's going nowhere but up from here, and I'm obsessed with her.
Well, coming up, the viral posts on Reddit. You know, we go to Reddit a lot and we find these crazy stories that has everyone talking, specifically about this guy who wanted his fiance to downgrade her wedding dress. And let me tell you, people were not happy about it.
Yeah, I think they were a little too mean and harsh on him, to be quite honest. But we're going to get into that and more.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
So there was this post on Reddit that went viral, and it is quite entertaining to say the least. It was posted by this guy, Josh, who's from the U.S.
Right, right.
I love how they preface from the U.S., like the U.S. has cheap men or something. And you'll get why when I explain the story.
Okay, okay.
He went on Reddit to complain about the supposedly really high cost of the gown his wife-to-be had chosen. And he went to Reddit to vent about it, which is probably the worst place you can go.
Well, it seems like this Reddit that we're always talking about, because I still don't know much about it. It feels like it's a community-based thing.
Yeah,
and everyone comes there to, like, they're talking to friends that they've made on the internet.
Are you, like, wanting your wife to leave you? Like, or your wife-to-be? You haven't even gotten married.
You're right.
Do you want your future father-in-law to hate you because you dragged your wife-to-be?
See, I don't know if it's all of
social
that.
Media
let's,
and the
let's
internet.
Get into the story
well,
so we can get into
in
this.
In the lengthy post, Josh explained how the couple, they're not the extravagant type, had each managed to put aside $10,000 for their dream day. So they have like $20,000.
Wow, that's a pretty good starting point. That's all right.
But when his partner, who he refers to as Emma, had her heart set on a $950 dress, and a $120 veil, he put his foot down and set to work to find cheaper alternatives. So this guy went on Google and looking at dresses online. Like, he's really going to know. And he found one that he said looks exactly the same for $50 to $100.
Oh, no, he didn't.
And he said, I'm not trying to get her to cheap out on her dress, but she will literally wear it once. One dress for over $1,000 is just insane. That would fund our honeymoon.
Okay, here's the thing. Now, after hearing his explanation, one, he has no right to be kind of stepping into this, because obviously we all know for, you know, the woman and like her wedding day, it's a special moment. Also, wedding dresses, they are passed down in generations. What if they have kids? What if she wants a nice dress to pass down? So I don't know. I think it does come off a little controlling, and I think that's why people are like, no, you're actually being very weird. Let her have her day.
Yeah, and they're like, this is what it costs. Like, you just don't get it. And yeah, they have a bit. I mean, it's not like they have $500 for their wedding. Anyway, we have an expert joining us right now, Allison Cade. She is the editorial director and millennial money expert at Fabric, a Brooklyn startup that's creating financial tools for families. Allison, welcome to the show.
Okay, so Allison, now, when it comes to having conversations and money and marriage, shouldn't it be okay to be able to splurge a little bit, especially when this is just a one-day situation?
Yeah.
It just feels like this guy is, like, a little, you know, aggressive in his approach.
I mean, I will confess that I spent at least that much on my wedding dress, but I think it really is about the couple and what they value. Mm. So if this couple decided together that they really are proud of themselves for being frugal, and she wants to, like, walk down the aisle in jeans, and they're going to use the money to, like, buy a home, good for them.
Is $20,000 a lot of money, though? I feel like that's a lot of money for a wedding.
It's a lot of money for a wedding, but I think that the national average is, like, $30,000, actually.
Wow.
So it's a lot, but it's not off the charts.
Yeah, so
given that...
What?
You know, it's like up to them. I think they just need to be talking about it. It's a bigger deal.
Yeah, communication is key. When should you start talking about money when you're dating or in a relationship? Like, when does this conversation start?
Well, I think when does it start and when should it start are two different questions.
Mm. Yeah.
But it can start super early in a broad way. Presumably on your first date, you don't want to ask them about their credit score, but you can have a conversation. Theoretically, like, if you won $1 million, what would you do with it? And that starts to get at what you value as a person and how you would use your money to further your life goals.
That is such a good tip. I never would have thought about that.
That's a good conversation starter.
Because I clearly just found out the reason why I'm still single, because I automatically ask about the credit score.
So do we all, you know.
Oh my God. I just talk about credit debt, and I'm just like, wow, that sucks, doesn't it, when you have credit debt.
But I guess when you think about this, and I also traditional, like, weddings, like, for cis hetero people, isn't it like the mother or the father of the bride actually pays for the wedding? Like, how does
the
that go?
Parents of the bride.
But normally, I guess people can afford, like, people's parents can't really afford that, I guess. So you have to kind of save. I don't know.
Is it changing?
Yeah. So I think both. I think that's the old school tradition, is that the bride's side pays. I think in the real world, that is definitely not always possible. I think it also depends on the age of the people. Like, think about it. If you're a professional with a career and 40 years old, probably you might not get your parents to pay for the wedding in the same way.
I'm a millennial.
Yeah, elder millennials right now. You know, we're still trying to figure our stuff out.
My mama just paid my rent.
Well, we want to continue this conversation because we're going to get into, after the break, mistakes couples make when it comes to their money and relationship and how you can avoid them. Don't go anywhere.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, we are back talking about money in a relationship, and we are with Allison Cade, editorial director and millennial money expert at Fabric, a Brooklyn startup that's creating financial tools for families. Check it out, Fabric. But before the break, we were starting to talk about mistakes couples make when it comes to their money and relationship.
Yes.
So what are some of those mistakes that people should look out for?
I think the biggest is about communication and honesty. There's some stat out there that I think money is one of the very top reasons why people get divorces. And part of that is so many couples keep secrets. And I heard this called financial infidelity, but if you have secret accounts or secret debts, not only is that bad financially, it's this like toxic thing between you that prevents you from being honest with your spouse. And you can bet that if they figure out about it, clearly they're going to be really upset.
Wait,
so
and
that causes just so much.
No, yeah, and it totally cause a lot of stress. But I also think about this, though. For people that have always been told to kind of keep your own money or keep your own bank account, especially what's the difference between like what you just said and a prenup? Because I do feel like, you know, if you're having your own money, and I do think if you're in a relationship, I do think it's okay to be like, this is my money, this is your money, and what I'm going to do with it. Like, if she, you know, she's like, oh, I'm going to spend this much on my dress, it's coming out of my money.
My $10,000.
Then what is the issue here?
Oh, totally. I'm talking about secrets.
Yeah.
So for the first few years of my marriage, we had separate finances, but there wasn't a secret. Like, we both knew that. It's not like I had a big pile of debt and I lied about it. So I think the issue here is lying and secrecy.
Yeah. And then at what point did you, I'm like, now I want to know about you. No. I'm like, at what point did you decide to merge? Like, when do those conversations happen?
Yeah.
What encourages couples to start merging the accounts or the money?
Well, in my case, it's when it started feeling weird and silly. Like, at a certain point, we've been married a few years. I'm Venmoing you for rent. I was just feeling weird. Like, and we were talking about starting a family and what, like, you get diapers this week and then I owe you for diapers next. Like, it's getting weird. And so at a certain point, it just felt like we're in this together.
Yeah.
And it felt like I was penny pinching with my own spouse, and I didn't like that feeling.
Well, that's the thing. It's all about compromise, right? And I do think, and we talked about this earlier, where if people are coming from two different financial backgrounds, I do think if people in finances can be very vulnerable having that conversation. It can also sometimes be embarrassing for one of the people in the relationship. So it's like, how do you navigate that and getting past that?
But I think it's the same way that you navigate any difficult conversation. Like, I mean, okay, like, let's say you have an STD or, like, herpes or something. Like, that's awkward, but you have to say something.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that debt is herpes, but both of these are awkward things that you will need to disclose at some point as you're getting more serious. And it's just about trusting this person to love you for who you are.
Yeah, no, it's very true. I think
at that point, I mean, you should be disclosing all those things. If you're getting married, you shouldn't be disclosing that all that stuff when you're already married.
But it's still so, I think it's just easier said than done when it's, I guess STDs, that's just different. But finances, especially for me and someone that has kind of grown in, I'm learning my own finances, you know, it's kind of living in scarcity. And you're also just always so scared about, oh my God, I don't want to spend this money. I got this money, I'll this and that. And so I feel like I kind of understand in some way where the guy's coming from. If he's just like, wait, we don't have to spend all that money. Why not spend it on a vacation instead of like a $1,000 wedding dress? I kind of get it.
I get it too. But I think that the key there is he needs to be, instead of getting all judgy and weird, I feel like they need to have a conversation about their goals. So you first talk about, what is your past? Like, what is your money baggage? And then what is your present? Like, what is your current? Are you in debt? If you're in debt, maybe you shouldn't buy a $1,000 wedding dress, but you need to talk about that. And then what do you want for the future? And that can include short-term stuff like a trip or a honeymoon. It can include longer-term stuff like we want to buy a home, we want to have kids. And it can include even like longer-term planning, thinking about, I mean, it's sad, but what would happen to your spouse if you're no longer around? I mean, you could even start having a conversation about life insurance and what it means to support each other for the big picture.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, like, people are scared to have that conversation because anything to do with death, it's just like, yeah, let's not talk about it.
Oh,
this isn't
God,
a fun conversation.
You avoid that like the plague.
Totally, but till death do us part is all I'm saying, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think people, for some reason, millennials can, like, cut that out of their, you know, the sentence or something. Like, la, 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 no, I'm going to live forever.
I mean, we're already dealing with such negativity happening currently in our climate. It's just like, let's not talk about anything in our own relationship that's, like, a dark cloud.
Totally.
Allison, well, thank you so much for joining us for this convo. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And of course, Allison Cade is a millennial money expert. You can check out the company she works for, Fabric, and it can give you some financial tools for families.
Yes.
Now, coming up, we actually asked you on social media, is cutting money in a relationship controlling, or is it just watching a budget and being responsible?
Yeah, so we got those results coming up next, and our yes queen.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Okay, before we get into our Yaz Queen of the day, we did ask you on social media, is cutting costs of money in a relationship controlling, or is it just watching your budget and being responsible? And what are the results?
Okay,
what are people saying?
No, so we actually have a lot of people responding. Our poll responses were totally controlling and budgets are good. So, this is overwhelmingly, like, huge. So 11.5% voted a certain way and 88.5% voted the other way. What do you think?
I feel like with money being, you know, on people's minds right now, people feeling like they don't have enough money, debt,
of course,
and all that. I feel like budget.
We're in a freelance world.
Yeah, I feel like budget. I feel like we're in a time where people are watching their budget.
And you are absolutely correct. Budgets are good, 88.5% in an overwhelming amount. I mean, here's the thing, Shira. I understood what Allison, our expert that just called in, was talking about. You know, you have to be honest and upfront and everything. I do think that's important, the communication part. But I do think you have to know it's very hard, you know, to have these conversations, especially one starting out or even dating or even getting into that level. Like, what do you wait, like 6 months in until you're really feeling like, oh, this is a serious relationship. Let's now talk about money. Like, it just feels uncomfortable at any point. And yes, you got to go through it, but it's just so hard.
I think that for me, because I've been open about my own struggles, it's kind of created an opening for the people I'm with. And so even the people I've dated in the past year, not even dated, well, I'm not really dating anyone, like even hooked up with, we've had pretty deep conversations about where we're at financially.
I will say my last relationship, we actually just recently just connected again, and we were just talking about and kind of overlooking. It was so random. We were overlooking, like, what happened, really, obviously, besides the cheating and everything. But we talked about how financial issues were a big thing for us, where we both moved out here, and our first year was really rough. And then there was a situation where we had got, like, a rental car, and by accident, I, like, got into a car accident with that rental car. And so he had to, like, pay like a lot of it. And it was just one of those things where it kind of, like, we actually had a very honest conversation about how finances were just such a kind of huge dark cloud over our relationship. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even when we first started dating before we moved out here, it was that.
You're so young.
Exactly. And so we were going through all of that and not even really knowing. And for me, I've learned so much about finances myself, even though it's crazy because my mom also dabbles in, like, financial education. So you would think I would know all of this information. But for me, it was like, oh, like a little kid that touches a hot stove. You kind of have to learn the hard way. And a lot of times I did. And so for me, I'm still trying to navigate getting out of the insecurities or the uncomfortableness or anxieties of talking about finances.
Oh my God. Even my ex, like, we were pretty open about our financial situation. We were very honest.
Yeah.
And he... I was doing well at different points, but he was making more money. He had more saved.
Yeah.
So when stuff hit the fan, you know, I would get very anxious because I didn't have enough saved to deal with those months.
Any of
the hardship.
What is a savings account?
Whereas he would get anxious even though I knew he had a safety, like a safety blanket.
Right.
More so. And so, you know, I visited him in China.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he likes spend. He spends on weird stuff.
But he also doesn't. He doesn't. To me, he doesn't.
He'll spend
come
on, like, buying
a
sauna.
Yeah.
He'll buy himself a sauna, or he will want to do first class train.
Yeah.
And he told me he bought the tickets. Well, He was like, well, I bought one way. And since I paid for your flight to get here, why don't you just pay for the tickets the other way? And I go, you know how much I've been like saying how stressed I am financially.
Yeah.
And you want me to buy the first class tickets? Of course I want to.
Yeah.
And then I go to shame. Like I feel ashamed.
Well, yeah, because now you're starting to dwell in that inadequately.
Yeah. And then I say, oh, am I just being in scarcity? Like maybe if I pay for it, like maybe more money's going to be coming in. Like maybe it's my attitude. But then at that moment, for me going into 2020, I was very honest with him. And I said, you know, I'm going to tell you exactly what's in my account right now. And you're asking me to pay for this when I have a lot of other stuff going on. He goes, well, I didn't realize it was, so bad.
Yeah. So I guess it does go back to the whole communication thing. And everyone clearly agrees with that. And budgets are very good, honey. I believe in that as well.
But, you know, 2020, we're looking up.
Yes.
That was last year, guys. That was last year.
We're picking up quarters instead of pennies.
Exactly.
Now time for our yes queen.
Oh, did we go to the answer? Oh, I thought you were
going to read the answer.
But you're going to read some fun answers.
Well, someone said, oh, I need to know, like, the people, like, in this. Like, it wasn't like that.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Let's go to our yes queen. One, I want to give a special shout out, even though we don't have the clip.
Right.
We've been watching Cheer, and we've been obsessed with that show on Netflix.
You know I love it. I'm telling
Please
you, it's a new documentary following a national championship team, cheerleading team, Navarro College or Junior College. And it just shows the strength that it takes to really do what they do. And then also their personal lives. They're really vulnerable and it's beautiful. It's moving. I'm telling you, you have to watch it.
Yeah, and now they're stars.
Like,
they were already stars in the cheerleading
world,
community.
Yeah.
But they just appeared on Ellen.
Yep.
And so, yeah, go check it out on Netflix. It's really worth watching. And then, you know, if you want to stock them online, I'm sure you'll go into some sort of deep stocking hole. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I saw that you were following Jerry, one of the guys.
I follow all of them, basically.
Who does this great motivational...
Matt Talk is what it's
Matt
called.
Talk. Yeah, and very much reminds me of Ryan.
Everyone has been texting me this. If you watch it, hit us up at LGT Show and let me know if you think that we have some similarities. I think that's the highest compliment because Jerry's incredible.
And then you also have similarities to the other guy who's a hard ass.
I love Ladarius. Too. But okay, also, what's the next yes queen?
This one goes to Janelle Monae, who's getting the Human Rights Campaign's Equality Award March 28th at the 2020 HRC Los Angeles dinner. This is from HRC President Alfonso David, who said, a highly celebrated and influential artist, Janelle Monae is an icon who has used her global platform to share a message of celebrating authenticity and embracing all of who we are.
Love to see it, honey.
Yeah, through her activism on initiatives that work to inspire civic engagement and advanced gender justice, Janelle has been a guiding force for positive change.
Well, so, she gets a huge yes queen.
There you go. And if you ever want to nominate a yes queen, you can.
Yes.
Hit us up on social media at LGT Show.
And that does it for us.
Oh, yeah.
It's
been
a great
goodbye.
Show. Yes.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it.
It's been a great show.
Yeah. And you can listen to all our shows, by the way, as a podcast on our site, wearechannelq.com, and where podcasts are available. And coming up on tomorrow's show, we're going to be looking at the controversy over the new immigration novel, American Dirt.
Yes, we are. There are some things. And plus, it's kind of came up again because of Oprah, and she's put it in her book club, and people are really upset about it.
All right. We're going to be going there. Let's go there with Cheer and Ryan, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Channel Q. We are sending you love and light.
And honey, you better remember to slay, y'all.
Stay tuned for Dr. Chris with Loveline right after this.